Okay, everybody come on in and be seated. We're going to start the meeting. Okay, and for our last speaker, it is my pleasure to introduce Roberta L.
So this is what helped me get out of relapse this last time, and that'll be part of my story. But, you know, I was talking about my higher power, and I was telling my sponsor, well, my son believes this, and I used to believe this, and maybe I should believe this. And she said, take a blank piece of paper and write God in the middle. So I want to do a brainstorming activity together, and then we can do it separately. But any word that kind of brings up the image of God to you or your higher power, just let's share.
Love
you.
Acceptance.
I'm just going to do one here, and then we're going to do another writing. Carol.
Forgiving.
John.
Always present. That's two words.
Always present.
Yeah. Generous.
Generous.
Love.
Unconditional love.
Unconditional love.
Kindness.
Helpful.
What's that?
Helpful.
Helpful, thoughtful,
powerful,
civil, safe,
understanding,
safe, I'm a warm person. What else?
Trustworthy.
Warm. Trustworthy and warm. What? Hold on. Trustworthy. Warm. What was that last one? Wise.
Consistent. Our founder used to start almost all her talks by saying God being good.
Good. Nature, beauty,
peace,
truth,
comforting,
fulfilling,
teachable,
strong,
calm.
What?
Calm.
I'm not hearing
calm.
You.
Calm.
From New York, I don't know. You don't say that. Calm. We don't say that else, but I like it.
Calm.
Babies. Okay. So anyway, that's what one of my assignments was. And it was very helpful to me to just write down words and to start seeing that the God of my understanding doesn't have to be the old traditional gray-haired grandpa in the sky with the long beard, you know, like Moses or the religious God, but it can have like a new feeling to it. And I'm going to tell my story, and then we're going to do a writing exercise after. So,
hi, I'm Roberta, and I'm a grateful recovered compulsive overeater.
Hey,
18. Okay, you got it. Thanks. And I'm really happy to be here and to be sharing the workshop with Ziva and Shari. And thank you, Bill, for organizing it. And thank you, Jonathan, for moderating it. I joined OA in 1979. I was 240 pounds. I was angry with the world. I lost 100 pounds in 10 months, like superstar. And the next, kept it off for about 8 months, and then for the next 22 years was in periods of relapse and recovery. And sometimes it would be for 2 weeks, and sometimes it would be for 6 months. But I never had anything like that first year and a half again. And I tried many different things to get back. I thought maybe I needed a stricter food plan, because when I came in, I was given something called a blue sheet, and we had, there was fruit on it. And I went to gray sheet because I thought maybe that's what I need. I was still in the diet mentality where you were either good or bad. I was either on the diet or off the diet. I knew nothing about the gray area, moderation, or maintaining a weight. I was either all my life on a diet or binging. And that was kind of the story of my, you know, my years. And I was a good dieter. Every diet was great. I became a Weight Watcher leader. That lasted for about a year and a half till I started gaining weight. So I could set a goal and reach it, but not when it was from the outside. When I tried to become a New York City school teacher, they weighed you. And I weighed, I think it was like only 20 or 30 pounds above whatever they wanted. But I would never, you know, they told me, lose 20 pounds and come back. So my reaction is, F you, I'm not going to do that. I could never diet to get into a dress for a wedding or because my father was going to give me $50 for every pound I lose. All the outside incentives did nothing for me. But when I determined that I was going to do it, you know, then I was able to do it most of the time. So as I say, I was a successful dieter, but, you know, could not maintain it. So every time that I gained, that I became a goal weight in college, you know, I lost weight, and that lasts maybe 6 months. My freshman year, I lost weight. I wasn't going to gain the 20, the traditional 20. So I lost weight because I went into college at 185. I could tell you what I weighed every year of my life because that's how I remember it. When I was, you know, working towards a thinner weight, even if it was, let's say, 160 pounds, if I was on the way down, I felt like $1 million. If I was on the way up, I felt like shit. So that's how I remember everything about my life, by how much I weighed. In program, like I say, I became into relapse. I worked a very, I thought, good program. I had a sponsor. I went to many meetings. I did the step work. Emotionally, I went to therapy. I sought outside help. I was able, this program opened me up to be teachable, and I'm forever grateful for that. I think that's one of my strongest character assets. I really remain teachable and open-minded. I'm always interested in what the next thing is or what you might suggest. So after I realized that, you know, the emotions and the steps alone, I don't know, they weren't doing it because my food was all over the place, you know. I'd resolve every morning that this would be day one, and many times it was, and many times by 3 o'clock I was back into the food. Nobody knows that a magical, you know, if any of us knew what changed it from one day thinking I cannot live without this food to be willing to try it for a day, I mean, they really, never have to worry about money again. But we don't know what it is, and it happens. And so, I had retired from teaching. It was early 2002. I had shoulder surgery. I had time on my hands. I wasn't waking up. I had retired 6 months before, and I thought, after I stop my job, I'm going to be really joyous because this program did a lot for me. I changed in many ways from 1979 to, you know, so that was, you know, 24 years. I've become a different person. I was much kinder, much more much less judgmental, much more patient. Some of those assets that we want in God, you know, I was able to change. But something was eluding me because I kept going back to the food and I kept wanting the food for comfort and I needed the food. And I was reading a self-help book that wasn't a program book at all. I was still going to meetings and I was still, you know, participating. But I came in agnostic, and once I got into the rooms, my higher power was kind of the group and kind of all the people in the group, but I didn't have a personal God. And in Bill's story, he talks about a God personal to you. And so that's what the exercise, when my sponsor said to me, you know, I decided I needed a sponsor who was spiritual, because I realize it is a spiritual malady. You know, the problem is physical and we go to the food, but the solution is not having a stricter food plan or a less strict food plan. It's a spiritual solution. So I realized that is where I needed to do the work. I needed to create a higher power that I could live with. I needed to create a higher power that I could learn to talk to. I was in program on Long Island and I was active in the group, and we went to hospitals sometimes. There was a particular facility that had, you know, very overweight people who were waiting for bariatric surgery, or so we brought OA meetings to them, and one of the women in the group would say, "Let's pray before we go in." So the five or six of us would stand around and she would just talk to God. And so I learned that you could just talk to God. You didn't have to be in synagogue speaking in Hebrew that I don't understand, saying prayers that, you know, were not meaningful to me. You could just ask God, "Please let me pause, let me breathe, let me be kind, let me be gentle." I learned that you could talk to God like you talk to a parent. So that was some of my persona of what I wanted in a personal God. I was always seeking spiritual path. I sought it by doing transcendental meditation when I was in my 20s, and I remember trying to say the mantra, and I guess it was my early 30s, because my kid was banging on the door and I was trying to say the mantra and, you know, ignoring the kids, you know, like just crazy thinking. Smoking marijuana, I thought, okay, maybe that would give me what I needed to rise to the higher level and communicate with God, and, you know, just doing whatever, you know, becoming more religious and making my house kosher and deciding that that's going to be my path. But it was all stuff from the outside, and unless it really resonates with you and that it feels honest and it feels real, it didn't last. And so that was my dilemma. My dilemma was that I didn't have a real connection to God. When I came into program, I was agnostic, but through program I learned that there is a God and there is something higher than me, because myself and food, I can't win. I you know, I have this disease, and when I came into the rooms and you told me it was a disease, I felt so good, because I didn't have to blame myself anymore, and I didn't have to blame my parents for the lifestyle or for whatever that they did. So that helped me. So the three-letter word that almost sent me out was the word God, because, you know, I just couldn't fathom it. I just didn't make sense to me that God could help in any way. But being in the rooms, I learned that by myself, I really have no power over food. Food will always win. And so I need to create and to extend something, someone, some being, some image of something greater than myself. I have to have a higher power that will empower me, and that's how I see step two. By empowering me, now I have some say in it, and the food doesn't have to win. But it's not through myself, it's through the group. So in this last abstinence, which has been since February 2002, so it's over 13 years, my food plan has become very much more inclusive. A lot of people say the road gets narrower, and it may in certain ways, in the way that I try to behave, but I haven't found that with the food. I'm blessed that I'm not particularly allergic to sugar. Yes, I'd rather eat something sugary than vegetables, absolutely, but if I have some sugar, it doesn't set me off. Like, I'd be content today with a bite of cookie, with a single serving of cake, with, you know, with an ice cream. So I haven't had to have any red light foods. This is personally. And I always try to emulate people that I like, but when you try to have a food plan that someone else has, that never works. I know what I need to eat. So I never went to a nutritionist. I'm not advocating that you don't go to a nutritionist. People say, you know, don't make your own food plan, but that always worked for me. I know calories and I know foods that I enjoy eating, and I have to enjoy my food because that's a big part of life. I don't want to, you know, I don't want to feel that I'm deprived. So I don't anymore, and that's a blessing. But when I do eat the food, I'm always in a calm emotional place. I'm not going to eat it when I'm at home and it's a holiday and I'm preparing. Then I won't touch anything that, you know, that calls me more than others. And so I've come to terms, you know, with ice cream now, I can have a frozen yogurt every day. I buy them once a week. They're pre-packaged. If I don't have to eat out of a big container, it works for me. And I was pretty much able to handle everything, but the thing that still kind of called me were pretzels. And a few weeks ago, I just determined, you know what, maybe you could, if you don't need to eat the whole box of them, because I knew in my heart, I don't want one pretzel, you know, one big pretzel. I want 10 of them, you know, which is basically a binge if they're 100 calories each. So I made up that I could do it, I could limit it, and, you know, people say that's playing with fire because if you have to control it, and I've heard very funny talks with somebody with jelly beans, and she put the red ones and 10 red ones and 10 yellow ones, and then Monday she'd eat the red ones, and she was hysterical, but her bottom line was she couldn't touch the jelly beans. Now, I don't know how the pretzels are going to play out, but so far, every day that I've decided to have them, I've limited to a serving. And that's been working. And it doesn't have to be every day. So the food has taken its place. But what was the one big thing? My sponsor said, well, are you willing to start the day with meditation and prayer? Because I started the day with exercise. I know that exercise is important. And I advocate, all I do really is walk. And I don't know, I have a little arthritis. I think it's arthritis in my right knee, so I'm very unhappy. I haven't been able to get my 10,000 steps. I talk about my little pedometer. It's a tool that I use. It's in my pocket, and I try to get 10,000 steps a day so that I know that I'm active and moving. So physically, I do that. And she said, well, can you try to have time with your higher power first? So that was one of the hardest things I did back in 2002 when I said, okay, I'll try. I was on vacation, and so I tried to start the day with a few prayers. And this morning I just I found my old prayer box. And in here I have like probably 100 pieces of paper, like my original paper that I started writing all my God words on. And then it grew. Every time I heard a nice prayer or a nice thought, I added it. And I just, you know, it got to be so much that it was like an hour in the morning and it was ridiculous. So, you know, I get carried away. And so now I don't even use any of these prayers right now, but I do journal every day. Journaling gets me up to baseline. You know, I'm a negative person. And so when I wake up, I do thank God for a new day, for restoring my soul. And but I have to get to gratitude. So I do that by journaling. and that really helps me. I also read some of our daily books and think about them, and I've been doing meditation, not any particular form of meditation. When someone says they do this, I try it out. There's an app that somebody mentioned, and I use that, and then someone said, oh, there's this website, and so I like guided imagery a lot. So I do meditate, and usually it's about 20 minutes in the morning. And it was interesting because when I was in Israel this summer visiting my kids and grandkids, we were doing it, I was with the two girls in a room, and so we would meditate before we went to sleep. And you know, it's like when you share something with someone, then when I got home, I didn't feel like meditating anymore. Like I had given away the secret. It's so weird. But anyway, now I'm grateful that I'm back into it. So this program has enabled me to accept so many things in my life. I mean, I have a wonderful, wonderful life, but like all of us, there are challenges along the way. And in 2006, I was chairing Region 6 in the on the East Coast, the New York area. We had a convention. I was a co-chair, and we had flooding at the hotel. And it was a disaster. The place was leaking. The parking lot overflooded, and my car was one of the ones that was totally flooded. Got in the car, started driving to try to get to safe ground. Seemed to be getting more in the water. So I just kind of said, you know, God, I can't do this, and you have to help me. And somebody was, they had tow trucks there. I guess this was an occurrence. It wasn't rare, but we didn't know that. And so somebody, you know, pulled me back, and my friends and I got all the water out of the car, and it was a brand new car, and that car took us 200, it drove home 200 miles. I don't know, we were probably stupid to get in the car, because the electrical system was shot, and the car had to be totaled. So I've had acceptance, and that was the first car I lost. Then Hurricane Sandy came, and we were out here, and my car was in the driveway, and that car got totaled. My house was destroyed. So I've learned that everything that God brings, that probably made it easier for me to make the move to Los Angeles, because I was kind of here and there. I had taken an apartment since my daughter moved here, and, you know, unfortunately, a lot of photographs, well, my photographs were lost. So many things were lost that I can't replace. But maybe it helped me to let go of the past and to move here. So I always try to see what it's teaching me. When my son and daughter-in-law and my six grandkids decided to move to Israel in 2007, you know, instead of saying, how can you do that? Because they lived an hour away. I was in acceptance. This is the best place for you. Go. Go with my blessings. And now I visit them. So I've just learned to kind of roll with the punches, to wear this program with flexibility. You know, any character, you know, like the people pleasing, to not try to please quite so much. You can have boundaries. You can say no. It's better for you to do that. So I would say that for me, the recovery from relapse was seeking a more spiritual path, having a personal higher power, talking to God every day. I call him God. I don't mind using the male pronoun him. It doesn't bother me. But you have to be comfortable with what you want for your higher power. God helps me. I pray all the time. I'm aware of God in my life. I'm very grateful. You know, the big book on page 66 talks about the sunlight of the Spirit. If I keep free from resentments and excess food, the sunlight of the Spirit, God's sunlight, can flow into me. So I don't hold on to resentments. I get rid of them immediately. I work my steps. I'll do a 10th step. When my husband and I have arguments, it's getting quicker and quicker for me to clean it up, because I can stay justifiably angry or self-righteous, but who is it hurting? You know, it's just, it's not helpful. I have to give 100%. I have to feel like I'm giving 100%. He is who he is. We all are who we are. And it's up to me to become who you allow me to be. Okay, thanks for letting me share.
So now I thought to help you either get a higher power or have one and talk to your higher power. You have a choice of one, two, or three. Either write an ad for yourself. If you don't have a higher power that's working in your life, write an ad for God. Use some of the words He said. Use whatever you want. Use bullet points or however you see an ad for a higher power. If you have a higher power and God is working in your life, you can write a letter to Him expressing your gratitude or your praise or whatever you want. Or you can write a letter, and this is, if you've never written a letter from God to yourself, it's very, very powerful. I've done it on a retreat. And it's because you hear, you tell yourself the things that you kind of feel embarrassed to tell ourselves. You know, you're a beautiful, strong woman. You have, so much to offer. So choose one of these, and you'll have 10 minutes to write on it. And are there any questions before we do that? Robin?
Bullet point, bullet points.
You know, kind of just like we said, you don't have to write an ABC. What happened to my God face? Oh, it's under it. This is bullet points. You know, just listing the assets that you want your God to have.
Okay.
Okay, would anybody like to share either their left or husband?
I wrote a short letter to God and God responded. So I wrote, "Dear God, I feel like I'm still resisting my last 35-pound weight loss. Please help me be ready to the last piece." I'm translating from Hebrew. I wrote in Hebrew. "So that I can be ready for my last piece of my physical recovery." And God answered, "My sweet little girl, I want to invite you to look with me at your growth and development in the last 10 years. You are no longer a victim of morbid binges that cause you to pass out. You no longer live in self-hate. You are able to show up to every commitment you have. You are a loving mother to your children. You are a present and giving partner. You are a kind supervisor. You enjoy your body. You started working now, doing body-mind work. You plan most of your meals in a very healthy way. Are you willing to be patient? Continue to do your work and let me be in charge of your last physical recovery. I love you and please trust me."
You don't have to come up. You can read from your place. Thank you, Annie.
Can you hear me now? I got a big mouth.
We can hear you. We are recording it, but I don't know if we'll record this part anyway. So that's fine.
Oh,
of course
that didn't go on my... Oh, it wasn't there? Okay.
Do I have to do it myself now? Do I introduce myself or... No.
Right.
I wrote a letter to God. "Dear God, I appreciate you. Thank you for your love and kindness toward me. Thank you for chastising me when I need it. Thanks for not allowing more than I can handle when trials come. You are so loving, gracious, and merciful. I see you working in my life every day. I see your protection and provision. I'm learning to trust you every day more and more. You're helping me to be more loving and patient and tolerant. I need your help with this so much. It's hard to be loving, patient, and tolerant because of my thinking and my sick character defects. Help me to do my part in your removal, in their removal, and remove your part. I can see I'm getting better. I'm more patient at home with Michael. I'm practicing the principles more. I'm aware more when they need to be practiced. Thanks for leading me to our power and to my sponsors, past and present. Thank you for everything I'm learning. Help me to use the principles on my job. Help me to remember to pause.
Hi, my name is Matt. I'm a compulsive overeater. And I wanted to at least say something about relapse and recovery. Just as a quick qualification, I've been a member of the Fellowship of Overeaters Anonymous since 1982. And I found recovery. Then I thought there was a better way. That there was some things that I felt I would not trust to a higher power. And that led me to a relapse that took me to all the way to 478 pounds. And 300 pounds later, I have some experience with coming back from relapse. And I look for relapsers. I look for morbidly obese people, to men particularly, to try to help. And, you know, it's just the same experience that I had. I thought I could control it. I thought I just, at 478 pounds, the picture is obscene. I thought I just needed to manage my food a little bit. And I've been around the fellowship a long time. I've always went to a lot of meetings. And I practiced the lies. Bottom line abstinence, kinds of food, all the stuff that would allow me not to have to face myself. Somebody's coming. So finally beaten into a state of reasonableness with all the desperation of a drowning man, it says. Think about that image, you know. All those things that I thought were so important. Well, when you're going down for the count in the middle of the ocean with no boat in sight, none of that comes into play. And, but I want to say one thing. It's not a scientific formula. It's not a mathematical formula. You get it when you get it. The pain is usually the stepstone, the touchstone to growth. There will be periods of suffering, whether it's medical or emotional or whatever it is. But one thing I can report coming back from the other side is I never, ever, ever have to be miserable again. There's a difference from suffering from physical ailments, suffering from loss, suffering from economic setbacks. Quite frankly, that's sometimes the way God works my metal. But I never have to be miserable again. And I don't have to explain to anybody in this room what that word misery means. So, it's a power greater than myself. And it's a better way. And I say all the time, you know, it's a better way. It's a better way. People think, in meetings, they think I mean because I'm 300 pounds less. I have a better way to act and react to life. My problem is not on the plate. It's in my head. Now, I've lost 300 pounds. I know a lot about the plate. Will not save me. And I heard somebody say it here. When I start with a list in the morning of I need to, I must. Lack of power is my dilemma. And I am never, ever going to get that back. But through a power greater than myself, anything is possible. So, anybody who's struggling in a relapse meeting, I just want to say, keep coming through that door. Every single time you come to that door, the miracle is still possible, because I was absolutely hopeless. And so thanks for letting me share.
I'm Veronica, compulsive eater. And so I'm just going to read my letter. It's basically just begging God. Dear God, please help me. I'm struggling with my food again. I need to be abstinent. I know this is my path. Please help me. Please help me. Please help me. Please help me. Please give me the ability to say no to my red light foods. Please give me whatever you think I need to learn this lesson. Please help me stay abstinent. Please, please, please help me. I feel desperate and lost on this issue. There's no human power. God, please help me get closer to you. Help me to stay abstinent. I want to love the gift of life that I've been given. Please help me. Just goes on and on like that. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Ellie, compulsive overeater. And recently I have stopped meditating. And so this is a letter from God to me. Dear Ellie, I haven't heard from you in a while. I'm still here for you. I just need you to connect with me again. You've been tired in the mornings, or lazy as you say, but I can energize you. Our time together is one of peace and serenity. You can dream, you can sleep, or you can actually meditate. Whatever happens is okay with me. There are no shoulds. I need you as you need me. We complete each other. I miss you. I love you. I hope we'll be together again. Love, God.
Kendall Blumick, an active compulsive overeater. I guess. I'm just going to read. I wrote a letter from God. Dear Kendall, I'm so glad to hear your voice again, though I've never left you. Whoa, this is going to be hard. Oh, my God. I've been here the whole time guiding and loving you, even when you weren't listening. I'm not angry. I love you just as much, if not more. I will love you always, even when you feel the worst and that you have no one. No matter what you do or do not do, I will love you. You are so incredibly strong and your heart is pure. You have so much love to give and you care for others more than you care for yourself. But that's okay. I will love you until you can begin to love yourself in the same way. It will happen. Do not worry. I have so many beautiful things planned for you. I want you to be able to see and feel them for all of their entirety. I wish for you to be present, but I love you even if you aren't. You have so many gifts, the world deserves to see them. You are my child, and I will never leave you. You are eternally loved, unconditionally and purely. I will walk with you and stay with you through the darkest times and the happiest of times. I am so proud of you. Love your heart.
Could just share on anything. You know, doesn't have to be what you wrote. Just general sharing.
I'm Joan. I'm a compulsive overeater. Really hearing some beautiful things here today. Dear precious Joan, I created you to be uniquely you, and there is no other quite like you. I love you. You are enough. Never think you're not. I will give you whatever you need to grow, to become more at peace, less fearful, more self-loving. I am your strength. Keep your eyes on me. Sit quietly and know I am always with you. You are never alone. Ask me for help. Ask me for peace, and it will be yours. Peace within, no matter what. Let go. Let me take the reins, and all will be well.
Jonathan, still a compulsive overeater. God, I know that I took number two, a letter to God. God, I know that you are there. My AA sponsor is dying, and I'm afraid, but you have given me so many people to help in his place. Please help me to go forward in my program to become a better human being, a better father, brother, boyfriend, member of AA, OA and Al-Anon, and a better, more timely human being, and a better, more efficient, effective employee, helping to become that early person that you'd have me be, helping to become a better listener and be a better Jew, and to find a path of balance with all these things to be a better human being and not beat myself up and waste time for being being human. Thank you for all you have done for me and allowing me to so many chances to help grow. Help me be so. Please help me to not be so selfish and self-centered, and help me to find the balance to listen to others. Thank you. Love one of your kids. I love you, Jonathan. P.S. Help me to help my kids.
So we also can. If you have any questions, the three of us will be happy if you want to write it down or ask it. Well, personal share.
I want to read my letter.
Okay.
I don't want to read my letter. My dear, sweet, thoughtful, and caring Carmela, I am so delighted at the person you are and the mature, loving woman you continue to grow towards. I hear and appreciate your kindness towards me and how you express your thanks and gratitude to me all throughout each day. I am filled with pride and joy to see you accepting and being more loving towards yourself and others. As you develop more and more faith in yourself, you connect more and more to me. I waited for you for a long time as you kept giving me the cold shoulder. Keep staying close. I am your God.
Hi, I'm Susan, compulsive overeater.
Hi, Susan.
Dear God, please guide my pen. Thank you for your nurturing and caring ways. Thank you for not losing patience with me. Thank you for your generosity and grace that fill my life. Thank you, God, for my absence and my serenity. I believe I only have them because of your graciousness and generosity. God, please continue to guide my thoughts, words, and actions. Let me remain close to you even when I struggle. God, show me how to lean into you more when it comes to getting into bed. You graciously let me sleep. It is my ego and my self-righteousness that encourage me to stay up 5 minutes longer and look at one more thing on the internet, play one more game of bridge or words with friends. God, you are in charge. Let me remember that as I continue to struggle to let go of my resistance to get into bed, you are there waiting to lull me into slumber and rejuvenation. I feel blessed that I am clear about who you are in my life. God, thank you, thank you, thank you for loving me unconditionally and tenderly and without regard to my stubbornness. God, you are the bomb, and I love you so. In your name, love, Susan.
Hi, this is from when Ziva talked. I had seen her out in the hall, and I thanked her for her honesty. So what I want to share is what happened to me about a week ago or whatever, in the last 2 weeks. And this has to do with a binge. And part of this is difficult for me because I think I'm supposed to be perfect, and I'm not. And opening up all of you with your honesty has helped me to just accept the fact that I'm still learning. So 2 weeks ago, I bought some Kind bars, which are the health bars, and I made certain that it didn't have dried fruit, and I made certain that it didn't have the chocolate, both of which are on my abstinence list. So I got nuts, and that was fine, and I brought it home, and I expected to be able to have that for the times that I would go to my Pilates class in the early morning. There was one that was going to be at 7 a.m., so I needed to eat and get out. My first error was A, buying them, B, buying four of them. And so when I came home one Friday night from my workout, I decided to have the bars for dinner. So I had the two bars, and it set off the obsession, and I finished the other two bars. That was it. That's all I ate. But that, to me, is a binge. And it wasn't what it used to be, where I would pass out. But it was, again, what I learned is that there are some things that I can't control any of it. But what I can control is whether I bring it into the house or not. So what I wrote was that I ate everything that I ate. It was the four of them. And although it was abstinent food, I realize I'm still, hello, a compulsive overeater, and that anything can set off the obsession, including eating too much cantaloupe or at times too many green beans. Honest. If I buy more than one or bring more than one into the house, I may be in trouble, meaning that I'll finish it and I will wrap up. I felt disgusted with myself at first, but then this program has taught me to move on, so that the next day it did not continue. I had moderate foods. I didn't overeat at any point during the day, and I fortunately have really bought into the idea that once yesterday is gone, that I move forward, I live in today, I forgive myself, and I move on. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Terry. I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi.
And I did number three, where I wrote a letter from God. This is the first time I did that, so thank you for that suggestion. Dear Terry, I'm so proud of you. You have come so far. You're a great listener. You're great at listening to cues that I send through other people. Continue on your path. I'm with you always, loving, providing, protecting, and guiding you. You are run into bumps in the road. That's okay. They are there for a reason. Trust in me, and you will overcome them all. I know you want love in your life. You have that. Continue to receive love from your family and your friends. I will send you the person for you when you're both ready. I love you, God.
Does anybody want to share anything before we close?
I have a question. Now that you're in recovery, coming from a point of recovery, when something occurs, which is pretty much daily life, whether it's a, but I'm talking about something like you get diagnosed with something serious, or there's a pending illness in your family, or you get fired, or something that's a strong, that has to be dealt with, what are the kind of actions that you do immediately to get into action to protect yourself so that you don't have to deal with any kind of thoughts and feelings. You know, are there anything that kicks in? Are there any program things? Is it a college? Is it writing? Is it saying? Do you upgrade what you're doing? You know, do you go back to something you used to do? Do you change your food plan at all? You know, what kind of things do you do to protect yourself when you get that feeling of what you do? Which for people who are overeaters, I don't know about you, but the negativity always outweighs the positive at a time like that. So anyway.
Good question.
Matt, did you want to answer?
Yeah, I just to share some quick experience. I don't want to
sure.
Be on the board.
And then we'll.
Yeah, my name is Matt, the compulsive overeater, and I feel very strongly about this. The first thing I remember is whatever I think my problem is, the life problem, it's worse at 478 pounds. Mm. It's worse. So the idea that compulsive overeating is going to make better is the nature of this malady that I have. It's in my head. It's not on my plate. And I had to get straight coming back from the last that Overeaters Anonymous, based on the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, is a way for me to recover from the disease of compulsive overeating, not a way of controlling my weight. It seems like the same thing, but it makes all the difference in the world, because the only way I can recover from compulsive overeating is through a spiritual experience. That spiritual experience comes from a maintenance of a fit spiritual condition. That's a lot different than counting calories and protein. Like I said, I lost 300 pounds. I know a lot about the plate. But there are some practical things that Big Book talks about that I've tried. Pause when agitated and doubtful. I got a text this morning from a family member, and boy, did I have a list of offenses. Pause. Restraint of pen and speech. And no matter what the disturbance, I must find a center, a quiet spot, before I do anything else. The only catch is when I was coming back from 478 pounds, I had to do that 35 times a day. But all I can report is it's worth the effort. Fortunately, I just get it without.
Sure. Okay.
Turn your thoughts over.
So, thank you for the question. So, I'll give you an example. I have three children, and one of them is now struggling with some big decisions she has to make. And one of the hardest things for me is to disappoint my children. And she really wants my support, and she wants me to go to the East Coast and spend some more time there. And I can't do it. So hearing her pain and knowing that I have to disappoint her triggered me. So what I did is, number one, I did the loving kindest meditation where I blessed her in my heart, you know, and knowing that she will be okay. The next thing I did is I called somebody in program in order to talk about it, because as I said, when I have big feelings, God is talking to me through people. Just praying at that moment is not always enough. So I called a fellow and I shared about it. The other thing is I did some writing about what's real and what am I making up. And the reality is that she's a very strong person and she's going to be perfectly okay. But, you know, if life was a fantasy, I could have maybe get on a plane, I just came back from there and go back. But it's not going to happen. So I had to let go of my disappointment of not being able to provide everything. I had to call another person. I had to pray and meditate and try to connect with loving and kindness to her. And the other thing that I needed to do is during those 2 days that I was dealing with it, is be very careful about planning my meals. Because I can be spontaneous in every area in my life, but I cannot be spontaneous in food. And you heard what happened when I went to Whole Foods without a plan. So that doesn't work. So when I was dealing with that,
I planned my food very carefully. I bought the stuff that I said I would eat, and I stuck to it even though I wanted to make a change. And when I plan a meal and I then want to make a change, I tell myself, you know what, you planned it, just eat it. You want tomorrow a different food, you can have. There is another dinner waiting for you tomorrow. So these are the strategies, you know, that I have used in that incident that helped me stay in a positive place, not overwhelm myself with guilt, and take care of my disease. So I don't know if it helps.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'll speak a little bit because I feel like I have been blessed that I haven't had real, horrible challenges. So it's very hard to talk about something, you know, I don't feel. Part of that is because I do kind of accept life on life's terms and what somebody else may see as a horrible situation. I really try to see what can be good in this. What can I learn from it? How can I, change my reaction? Because my gut reaction, you know, is the why me and the negativity. But to try to just turn it around and see what am I going to learn from this and how can I help others through this situation. And just, you know, like both Matt and Ziva said, I would pray about it. I share with others. Sharing with others helps me a lot. I have my people call it their God squad or the people that I feel comfortable with and my sponsees and friends that, I share what's going on. And I too, when situations are difficult, I stay very focused on minimal eating. Just the foods that I know are not going to look too appealing in any way. You know, I weigh my protein, I weigh my salad dressing, it's kind of when you're in crisis mode, you know, I know emotionally that I need to just stay kind to myself and loving to myself and that's what helps, you know. I do write, I do share, and mostly I just pray to help me see things in a way that can help others, that I can get through this time. The most difficult thing is to sit with uncomfortable feelings. That's why we all became compulsive eaters. We didn't want to sit with the uncomfortable feelings. So, you know, it's like a two-year-old, I could have my little temper tantrum, but I know I have to sit with the uncomfortable feelings. And, although it's not life-threatening in any way, lately I've been having pain in my knee, my right knee, and it's moving all around, and it's really, and when you get older, there are challenges, and when you're sort of walking like you're 10 years older than you are, you know, it's not helpful to your psyche, to your whole, being, but, I just keep praying and keep thinking, you know, I take all the action. This is a program of action. So I do everything I can do and then just let it go and know that God's in charge.
I just want to add one thing. I just want to add one thing. That I never fails. Calling somebody who I know is struggling. When I'm in a really difficult place, that without fail makes me feel better. So just the thought.
So there's a lot of things that were going on in my head. I love in the doctor's opinion, it says we have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. Whatever we use to escape, it's so the first word, seemingly, because everything I'm feeling feels very real. In that moment, it feels like it will never end. It feels like, oh, my God, urgency, danger, danger. And I am a compulsive overeater. My knee-jerk reaction is to go to the food. The miracle is when I don't. It's not a given. It's not a guarantee. And I have, so seemingly, feels real, hopeless. It feels like the worst thing about relapse, the despondency and the despair. And I just need to, you know, it's just like, help me see things differently. And the state of mind and body. So I have to take care of the mind. And I notice for me, when I have different feelings, I need to take care of myself in different ways. When I have anger, I was sharing with somebody, I can't sit with it. I can't sit and write because I start to shake. So sometimes I'll scream in the car because I have to get it out. I've spent years stuffing down. So I'll scream in the car, I'll pound my bed, I'll kick the air. I just shake it off and say, God, I can't afford this. I can't keep this. You take it. And I literally will envision myself, here's a bag of shit and garbage. It's not mine. And I may have to repeat it, and I'll say the serenity prayer, but it's very visceral. When I'm in fear, I can't breathe. So I'm going to step outside and just hear the birds and just try to get a deep breath in. Because I have, you know, because it's that sense of urgency, oh my God, the anxiety. When I'm sad or lonely, let me reach out and connect. Let me hear a podcast. Let me hear another voice. Let me sit in a meeting, even if I never say another word. And when I'm tired, let me go to sleep. Let me rest. Let me not push through yet one more thing. And I've had to learn this self-care by trial and error. That is the tools that help me, but of course, it's that psychic chain. How am I going to see life differently? Life is going to happen. And I love, in page 450, in one of the stories, it talks about separating sobriety from life. It's a constant striving for. I don't always do that, you know, because I always, just sometimes, because it feels like I can feel more and things get bigger. But I have to always bring myself back to the present and say, am I okay right in this moment? Do I have a roof over my head? Am I okay? And then I just do the next thing and the next thing. And then things will take care of themselves, like you should do.
Yes, Bridget.
How do you overcome the shame of a relapse? The guilt? As you feel after a binge, after you try so many times to overcome that, you've relapsed so many times, and here you find yourself back at level one, binging. How do you overcome that guilt, that shame of, damn, I'm binged again? How do you deal with the feeling of guilt, the shame, to get back on?
That's a big one. That's a big one. You know, one thing, they say don't leave before the miracle happened. And there are many, many miracles. And like I said, the miracle is when I don't eat. So I ask myself and I ask others, what am I willing to do today? It may have nothing to do with the food. And maybe let me pick up a book. Let me get to a meeting. The more esteemable actions I take, even if it's minuscule, the better I feel. I can't, it's like, well, let me let go. Well, I can't let go. My God, I can't let go. The only way I'm going to let go of that guilt and shame is to pick something else up. It's going to get bigger. It's like recovery is progressive. The disease is progressive, but so is recovery. So I keep doing esteemable actions. I keep doing things that make me feel better while I'm effing up over here. But eventually, this gets bigger. That's how I let go.
Thank you. I also think that for all our lives, for all my life, it was a punishing thing. You fucked up again, and you're bad, and I took out the whip, and all that ever did was want me to eat more and keep going down. Mm-hmm. And somebody in this program said, you know, you don't have to take the elevator all the way down to the basement. You can get off at any level. Mm-hmm. But sometimes it felt like I had to just go all the way down to the basement. But in the rooms, I really have learned to treat myself with love and to, you know, the big book says, you know, not if this happens, when they're talking about the 10 steps, you know, when it happens. It's going to happen. Are there things in our lives, you know, that we think that we're beyond? It's going to happen. And so I think that for myself, it's just been a change in how I react to myself. I don't, you know, when I make the wrong choice, when I overeat, it's not if it happens. It does happen. I've given up perfection. I've given up punishing myself. I love myself back. When I do my 10th step, okay, my food looked like crap today. I didn't like it at all. It's not going to look like that tomorrow. So it's just treating myself with kindness. You know, we wouldn't talk to any other person the way we talk to ourselves. Mm-hmm. So it's really just trying to be that loving, kind God to myself. And just, you're beautiful, you're sweet, you're kind, okay, you know, just let it go and you'll do better tomorrow.
I think that, I mean, I don't have a lot to add, so I don't need 3 minutes, I can do 1 minute. That it's a disease of harshness and self-hate and self-destruction, and the recovery is really about kindness. And I think that every day that we have, that we are able to be kind to ourselves, is like a saving account in the bank. That when, after the more days like that we have, the more we can draw upon those days when we are in a place of questioning, you know, our integrity.
And for me, I believe there is no such thing as shame, and there is no such thing as guilt. The greatest thing is that anything you ever did that made you feel poorly about yourself will now be turned around to help another human being. And you can be sitting in San Francisco talking at a podium about how you live with a man that beat you up or chased him or how you had an illegitimate kid or just horrible things that you stole and did, and maybe 5 years later somebody will be sleeping in front of their car in front of your house knocking at your door because they found you because they have it, that's what they're living now, and they're hoping you can help them. So the greatest thing is to be speaking somewhere and seeing somebody crying in the audience. Mm-hmm. And so I think there can be great joy between things. Some of the things that you guys have released today and people in the audience, I know have touched hearts here. You know? And that's a great joy of any 12-step program, is there's nothing to do with that. That constant thing that works. You know, we're just a little sick. Many times it's like, well, you're very sick, you know. But everything could be done now as a helpful tool for somebody.
Thank you.
Yeah, I wanted to speak to the question of shame. Shame is usually a condition of layers of judgment. And although I think you need to address everything at multiple from multiple angles, I think that in the moment, while you're going through it, the easiest thing to do is to move open towards it. And with loving kindness, using compassion phrases can help. And I found 101, which is Hawaiian meditation. It's basically, I'm sorry, please forgive me, thank you, and I love you. But I like to modify sentences so that they hit the notes that I need to hit. And so you can simply say, I'm so sorry that I just made this mistake. I'm so sorry that I keep taking this personally. I'm so sorry that this is so hard that I don't know any better. Please forgive me for being so confused. Please forgive me for judging myself as weak. Please forgive me for constantly fucking up. You know, whatever it is that you need to say. But it actually works the best when you are in a state of pain, because you can really tune in to the thoughts and the judgment doesn't cause anything. And you can say thank you for this opportunity to surrender. Thank you for this opportunity to let a little something go. You know, might not be able to let it all go at once, but you can always let something go. And
thank you for this opportunity to look at this differently. I like to use the thank you phrase when I do Kundalini Yoga, because we hold our arms in these positions for like ever. And I'm in pain, and so I just say thank you for this opportunity to let this go. I have no idea what it is, but and I find that that immediately changes. The more I do it, the faster it starts to be immediate. But it changes the way I am approaching the thing that I'm suffering around. Mm-hmm. And then I said, I didn't even do I love you first, because, you know, I just decided to start one phrase at a time. And, you know, if you just say, I love you for hearing me in this moment. I'm loved, even if I don't know. You know, you could just pick whatever you want and let that serve you.
Thank you. My question is, I love what you said about, I forgot your name.
Ziva.
that it's a disease of harshness and self-hatred, and the treatment, something to that effect, is kindness. My disease sometimes talks to me in a really nice way, like, oh, I'm tired, it's okay, you know, like that. And then I'll interpret that as kindness, but it just, you know, I don't know. I'm having a hard time reconciling, I guess maybe not kindness coming from myself, right? I don't know. Do you have anything to say about that? I'm curious.
I mean, you know, one of the things I learned is that when it comes to this disease, I need another person to act like my social agent. I can't trust the voices in my head when it comes to food. Because my disease would tell me, go to the salad bar at Whole Foods, and you are in so much pain now, few little carbs will not hurt you. Right? And when I did it, it didn't work. But when I didn't do it for many, many, many days before and after, when I'm in that place that I hear that message that is unclear, I call another person. And I cannot tell you how many times I reached out to fellows when I was about, before I made a decision that was not smart, and I used that voice of recovery to help me make my decision. Now, another thing I just want to share is that when I, the first 2 years of this abstinence, I also reached out a lot to phone meetings. There are many phone meetings, almost 24 hours a day, and there were many times that I was in a place that it was like, I don't know, 3 p.m. I don't know who to reach right now. I would call into a phone meeting, and some phone meetings I would share, and some I would listen, and then for 6 full months I was the secretary of 4 9 p.m. meetings a day. Mm. Because that was the hardest time for me. So now when I say secretary, it means I would call in and open the meeting, and then I would mute the lines if there was any noise, and sometimes I brought a speaker, but it guaranteed that 4 nights a week at 9 o'clock I had to be on the phone. So I did it for the first 6 months of my abstinence, and after that, to this day, if I have a hard day and I'm able, I call one of those random numbers that appear in the OA.org, and I listen. So there are many, many ways where we can reach out and get support.
No,
I was going to say, I can't trust that voice, because that's why it always comes so nice. It's just okay, just a little bit. And that's why I need to make a plan before the day, so I don't have to say, what shall I have right now? What shall I have? You know, I don't feel like having that. I'm going to switch. You know, I know the food I like to eat, so I have a food plan, and it actually tells me what time or time windows I'm going to eat, because I can have 3 meals and a snack after 6 o'clock. What's wrong with that? You know, I can wait and go a long time, and then I'm like having, you know, 1 hour after the other. So, that having that plan, you know, a little bit of structure helps me.
Mm-hmm.
Jonathan?
Yeah, a direct one question for you. I guess particularly Roberta talked about the God thing. I'm like, you know, I'm 42 years sober, but it was really in the last 4 years, 10 months of abstinence, I started really stop bullshitting about my connection with the higher powers I had to. And I was a suicide death eater. I'm really bad. Not 4 in the past, but I was dying for sure. So I want to speak to you about it. My question is, I'm not sure if I put it right, but is that connection to higher power? I mean, I hit my knees, I'm Jewish, I hit my knees every morning, every night, try to talk to God throughout the day, try to do the right thing and align my will with His. But how do you continue to do that and keep that going? Because it seems I'm always falling. I mean, I'm great talking in the meeting, great on my knees, and then I get to work, and a damn computer or somebody ticks me off, or the thing's not working right, and I just want to say, you know, F the whole universe and throw up, I mean, a lot of rage. But, you know, but I want to keep that connection to higher power. A lot of times I have to re-ask him again and again and again. It seems like some people think to me that they're connected. I know my AA sponsor's like that. He's always been like that. He's had many life and death experiences. I haven't had total life and death experiences like that. I've nearly died literally 9-10 times. So I don't know if you need that or not, but I'd like to know how do you stay connected to your higher power and really feel that higher power is with you. And ask questions for anybody. You guys in the panel, ladies.
Yeah.
Hey, does that make sense?
Yeah. There's no, just like, there's no one formula, and every day looks completely different. But I guess it's just having God consciousness. For me, first of all, I'm not working right now. You know, and I have lived a charmed, blessed life. So I don't feel like I'm in the ditch. You know, they say there are no atheists in a foxhole. Like, I haven't had that kind of a challenge and that kind of a, you know, situation. In day-to-day living, I think what works best for me is that, you know, besides in the morning, you know, just thanking God for waking up and restoring my soul, just really being in gratitude for the whole day, for whatever comes, keeping a positive attitude, you know, kind of trying not to get into the, you know, refusing. Like, sometimes it annoys me, the people, you're walking on the street. I live near Larchmont, and there are a lot of socially active people, and they have all good causes. And you're doing your thing, I'm walking, and they try to engage you to sign a petition. And then for a long, you know, I'll say, oh, I'm sorry, I don't have time now. And then it entered my mind, I don't want to be in that phase, no thank you, I'm sorry. I don't want to feel negative when I leave them. So I, like, now say, oh, thank you for all the work you're doing, you know, it's great. So that I feel good about myself. I think when I feel good about myself, that's God speaking through me, and it encourages me to stay connected. You know, whenever there's something a way that I react, it just comes intuitively. Ooh, I don't like the way I reacted. So it's kind of like changing right on the situation, seeing things differently, you know. And that keeps me connected to God. I when I get into the car, I always remember to thank God. I have, you know, people suggest that you set a timer, and when the timer goes off every hour, can, you know, just a way for you to say thank you to God. But for me, it's more of, I want to be in social, when I'm in relationships, I want to be godlike in them, you know, and behave well. So I think that just keeps me, so whoever I'm talking to, it enables me to just respond from a good place.
I want to add something. What makes the difference for me is having an active God connection throughout the day. because I used to meditate in the morning, but it was more like a route meditation of prayer. I would like set a timer for a few minutes and then rush to work. Now, in the last like 5 years, I have a God consciousness a lot throughout the day, and I have little phrases that I use. For example, I was in a training this morning that I was running in my agency, and the facilitator was not presenting what I thought she would present, and I invited the people, and I started feeling frustrated that people are not getting what they came for on a Saturday morning. And I knew that this angst is not a good place for me. So again, while she was talking, I was sitting there, and for probably a minute, I didn't pay attention to her, and I said, God, I'm turning this over to you. I'm not in charge. It's her workshop, and whatever people will get or not get, I can have no control over it. And then I said, God, make me a channel of love this morning. Mm-hmm. And it was just a sentence. And I said it, and then I went to the bathroom because I needed just to remove myself, because I was getting so angst that I arranged this workshop. It had a title. Everybody came to hear the title. It's nothing about the title was presented. But just saying that and turning it over to God, because really I could do nothing about it, and removing myself for like 20 seconds and coming back, I felt like something shifted inside of me, and I was calm, and it went well. I mean, it ended up being what it was. But I am, throughout the day, I need to do those little tiny connections in order to keep myself, you know, connected to my higher power. And make me a channel of kindness is a sentence that I use endless times during the day.
Okay. I say the Serenity Prayer a lot. Sometimes until I don't know what I'm saying, you know, if I find myself agitated. You know, when agitated, disturbed, we pause. And I say that a lot, and I also try to connect with myself. What am I feeling? What's going on? Is there anything I can do about it? If not, I, you know, ask God for help. And, you know, we are not sane. These feelings, when they come up, how do we deal with life? How do we live? And I have to be reminded to go to God, because I want to fix everything by myself. You know, I want to feel better. I want to do this, and I need to do that. And sometimes it's just, I just need to remove myself, whether to go to the bathroom or step outside and just breathe. And say, if there's nothing I can do about it, you know what, I don't know, this too shall pass. Good and bad, this too shall pass. So I just try to, you know, go with the flow of things.
Thank you.
Thank you. One more? No more?
One more, and then I say this one.
Yeah. Anybody else want to say something? Matt?
My name is Matt. I'm a post over here.
Hi, Matt.
And, you know, there's a couple things I heard. I just wanted to share some experience with the idea of being trapped by the weight. Now, I've done it again. I realize I have that lucid interval where I know that, you know, I'm just weight and my circumstances are dire. Well, first of all, it's not a contest. I don't think I'm more of a compulsive overeater than a guy who has 25 pounds to lose. It's in the mind. And my recommendation is don't do what I do. You know, you don't have to go to 478 pounds. That's the whole idea. We're supposed to raise the bottom for each other. So that guy did it. I don't have to do that. But there was this thing that we were talking about shame. And it says our chances are less than average because I don't have... because I'm constitutionally capable of being honest about myself. And
in those moments of shame and all that, I realize that shame for me can be grandiosity. It can be either more than reflection, which gives me more excuses to compulsively overeat, or grandiosity that everybody else is not treating me right. You try to get straight on this idea that it talks about self-centered fear. What is self-centered fear? Self-centered fear is the fear that I'm going to lose something that I think I already have, or I am not going to get something that I desperately think I have to be happy, or I will not be happy until I get that thing. Well, that's self-centered. That's not, oh, I'm the victim. Oh, that's not, oh, I did it again. I have the mind of rationalizing compulsive overeating. I will take every life event and try to turn it to an excuse to compulsively overeating. Because I do not want to feel the pain. And that pain is, what is that pain? Is it just a pain punching in the face? No. It's fear that I'm going to lose something that I think I have, and or I'm not going to get something else. I'm never going to find out if I don't put the food down long enough. If my story is, I did it again, I did it again, I did it again, and I feel better about it, now that's not calling anybody else. I'm talking about myself. And I've been around long enough to know that it takes what it takes. And I'm not criticizing anybody else. I'm saying me. But I can stay in that cycle of feeling better about it all the way to death or death. At some point, I have to face myself. And what face myself means to me is self-centered, selfishness and self-centered. I'm not a victim of anything. I am not this or that. I am self-centered. I am preoccupied with me. Hope that doesn't sound too hard.
Thank you. Yes, Ellen.
I would just like to thank the panel. And also Phil and the moderator, you guys.